Wow, it's quiet.
Hi, Dave. Everyone's breathing.
Oh, you're like, oh, wow, it's really, no one's on the call.
I am. This is Donna.
Hi, Donna. How are you?
Good, good.
Who else is here? Do we have Ruby?
Ruby, woohoo!
Ruby's woohoo is here. So what's Ruby's natural style, do you think?
I.
All right, yeah. Kathleen.
Kathleen's here.
Wonderful. And Angela. Susan.
I'm here.
She is. And Bob.
Present for duty.
Present for duty. And Beth.
Yep.
Wonderful. And Denise.
I'm here.
Here we go. And Mike.
Hello, I'm here.
Go. And Yolanda. How about Glenn?
I'm here, Dave.
Good. And Jonathan? And Terry?
I'm here.
Wendy?
Wendy's here.
Felicity?
Good evening.
And Ruth? All right, so I'm missing Angela? Yolanda? Jonathan and Ruth. Hopefully we'll be along shortly. So welcome back to our third session on using DISC in coaching. A couple of admin things up front here. Someone has asked me about sharing email addresses. Now, some of you guys want to do that, and some of you don't. So here's what I'm going to suggest to you. If you're willing to share your address with the group, drop me an email and say, Dave, I'm willing to share my address with the group. And I will start putting those in the to section of the documents that are going out. You don't want to share your address with the group? That's okay. Just don't send me an email, and I'll have you guys still in the BCC area. So those that want to share can share. Those that don't want to, don't have to. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, great.
And someone asked me to stay after class night and talk about, I think it was marketing of DISC. Is that right?
Yes, that was me, Glenn.
Okay, good. So when class ends tonight at the top of the hour, we'll dismiss the class. I'll leave the recording on, though. And those that want to stay and hear about marketing, how I used to market with my DISC, can hear about that. If you think that is incredibly boring and you're tired of listening to my voice, you can hang up, but that won't matter a bit. Okay?
All right.
Sounds good. All right, let's get right into our discussion for today. We're going to review our session two real quickly. We talked about the behavioral style chart. And again, I encourage you guys to start practicing drawing that freehand. Preview the marketing. I did a lot of that marketing by drawing that chart freehand. Made a bunch of money doing it too, so it's worth doing. We talked about the high D being active and task-oriented. They are direct. They are decisive. They want to get things done. They're results-oriented. They also tend to be very natural leaders. They like to be in charge. They expect to be in charge. If you want them to, they may still be in charge. That's kind of the way they are. they do tend to get distracted by other tasks because they want to complete as many tasks as possible. They tend to overuse their directness, and that can put some people off and make people feel uncomfortable. You're going to coach the high D, coach their action oriented to begin with, so help them take the actions. They like the actions. They may miss the emotions of others, so help them become more aware of emotions of others around them. When they're working with others in terms of that emotional, they tend to focus on, they make them across as making demands of others versus requests. So you got to soften the high D sometimes. Some questions you might want to consider asking them is, what are you going to do about this? They love that question. How will this impact others? Question they won't always think of themselves. Likewise, the high I. Active and people-oriented. Natural influencers, great communicators, very enthusiastic, as we've already heard here tonight. Also tend to be leaders, and they're much more visionary leaders than the high Ds are. The Ds tend to take leadership roles to get results. The Is tend to have great vision for what they want to get to. They're also easily distracted, but in this case by other people versus tasks. They tend to be tend to overuse optimism, and they talk sometimes so much that people stop listening to them. You may not be aware of that. So when you're coaching the high I, remember they're optimistic and upbeat. So you can expect even when they're really depressed, they're going to sound upbeat and optimistic. So you have to make sure you really can read their emotions. They tend to focus on things. They'll talk about great things they're going to do, but they need to be held accountable for their actions. So be their accountability partner. As you're coaching the high I, you may find that they wander away from the task at hand, the important things. As a coach, you have to bring them back into what really is important. And they may prioritize a lot of things as being really important. They're going to get done right away. Too many number one priorities, help them focus on what's really important. Questions to ask high I, what may go wrong here? Because they may not think about what could go wrong with their solution. And when can you realistically expect to complete this task? All right. Quick review of the high D and the high I. Questions about that before we get into tonight's quiz. We have the D's and the I's nailed down pretty well, we think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see how you guys do on the quiz here then. You have it in front of you, right? So which of the following animals is most like the high D? A soft, cuddly kitten.
Yep.
A wet-nosed, lovable puppy.
Nope.
A quiet, soft bunny rabbit. A Tyrannosaurus Rex. Which is most like the high D, do you think?
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
And why the Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Charges ahead.
Yes. And they just might eat you for lunch, by the way. Well, that's fairly easy, though, isn't it? Right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty easy to pick out that high D there. Here's another one for you. What statement was like it came from a high D? My, you look lovely tonight. Can I help you carry those heavy packages? You had me at hello. Or give me the remote control before I beat you with a 2x4.
Give me the remote control.
Again, fairly easy to pick out that high D because they tend to be rather aggressive and results-oriented. Mm-hmm. As easy, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here's the high I. Which animals most like the high I? A black rhinoceros. A yellow lab. a California sea lion, or a sea turtle?
Yellow lab.
A yellow lab.
Go with yellow lab.
And
I'm going with the
yellow lab.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I.
Which one do you think is most likely the high eye then?
The California sea lion.
And why is that?
They're very loud.
They're very loud. And high eyes can be loud, true.
They're playful.
They're playful. Okay.
And they're show off.
Sorry?
They're show off.
Yeah, and they're show offs. That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that before. And some folks said the yellow lab. Why did they say the yellow lab?
Socially, want to be the center of it all.
Mostly want to be the center of it all? Yep.
Yeah.
What
very
else?
Social.
Very social.
Their relationships.
Friendly.
Their relationships are important to them.
Relationships are important to them.
High energy.
And they're very high energy. So I tend to go more with the lab, but you made a good case, really. For the California sea lion, it made a really good case for that one. All right. So what statement likely came from a high eye? Go ahead. Make my day. One potato, two potato, three potato, four. You look marvelous. Or let's make him an offer he can't refuse.
Marvelous.
You look marvelous.
You look marvelous. But I know where that quote came from.
Where?
Billy Crystal, I don't know.
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal was imitating Fernando Llamas. He said, you look marvelous. Yeah. High eyes tend to focus on things like looks. They tend to compliment others very readily. They'll find things about you that they like, even if no one else can see it. They'll see it and point it out. They want to make friends. And that's a good thing. That's a nice trait to have. All right. So they talk about the D's in the eyes. In both cases here, they tend to stand out, don't they? What you're going to see here tonight is that the S's and the C's don't stand out so much. They're a little harder to tell, a little harder to pick apart in terms of which ones they really are. So let's start here by talking about the high S. Now, the high S stands for steady or stable. Or secure. They tend to be much more low-key because they're on that more thoughtful side of our equation here. They tend to be people-oriented, so they tend to be friendly and relaxed. They're very accepting. They're going to be more slow in motion, if you will. And they have a natural fear, which is that fear of change. They kind of like things the way they are. They accept things the way they are. And they really don't want to have things change on them too much. So if you think about some people you might know and you say, I know my little friend Sally here, and Sally's not very happy in her job. She always seems to not be comfortable there, but, you know, she stays there. She talks about leaving, but never actually does. Likely she might be a high S, because they'd rather stay with a devil that they do know than face a devil that they don't know. And changing jobs, even if I hate my job, is a big deal for them. life, we see the same kind of thing in relationships. Maybe with someone or dating someone that they really aren't that thrilled with, but they just keep hanging on to them. They'd rather have someone than no one. And, yeah, this person's not great for me, but, hey, you know, at least I know who they are. So let's talk here a little bit about the high S. They're even-tempered, patient, helpful, accommodating. Some people say that high S stands for salt of the earth. Now, while the D's and I's are natural leaders, the high S is a natural follower. And they tend to be really great team players. They'll pitch in to get things done because they think that's part of their job. They really have a small circle of friends that they really enjoy. And they do everything with them. They're relaxed, easygoing, and slow to anger. They're loyal to their friends and their family. Remember birthdays, names of your spouses and the kids, and your anniversary because they care about you. And this is the high S. That's kind of at their best. These are great things about the high S and things that make them really lovable people to be around. So here's a story about a high S. Holly's a high S. Been with her company for about 7 years. Got there right out of college. She likes her job and her coworkers, but at the end of the day, she's glad to go home to her husband and her three-year-old. On her desk, she has pictures of her wedding and a family picture, and of course, a picture of her holding her newborn child. Now, Holly's being considered for a supervisor's job. She's pretty sure she can do it. Everyone likes working with her, and she knows they'll do her best for her. So what's her challenge? Well, being the boss means having to deal with employees' problems. And while they're not really bad employees on the team, you know, Marcus on that team is not really carrying his whole weight. And she dreads the idea of having to talk to him about what's going wrong. So that's a good view of a high S. High S at their best. They like people. They like doing what they do in their job. But the idea of confronting a problem, even a small problem, is distasteful to them. They may need coaching getting some of those things done. So you know someone who might be a high S that you have in your life? You picture some folks like that who you know they're just salt of the earth?
Absolutely.
Really hate the confrontation?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And those are great people to be with, aren't they?
Yeah.
So the high S has a lot of good qualities about them that makes them really good people to have as friends, as neighbors, as family members. And this is, by the way, a large part of the population. But like every other style as well, there's a downside, a bad side, if you will, to the high S. So let's talk about the high S at their worst. So at their worst, they're passive, complacent, and maybe even a little bit lazy. No sense of urgency in their work, and they feel like when it gets done, it's going to get done. It's okay. They don't like change, and they're passive-aggressive in protecting the status quo. From all these unnecessary changes. They can be shy to the point of being timid and won't speak unless spoken to. They tend to hide their feelings, both positive and negative, rather than expose themselves to any outside ridicule. That sound familiar to you as well?
Yeah, definitely.
The same basic high S we had before, who was so nice to be around. That's why I had a coin with a high S that can be unpleasant for all these reasons.
I think sometimes they can be a little rigid without knowing it.
And why would they be rigid? What would cause them to be rigid?
They don't want to change anything.
Exactly. And they don't see it. Because they just, you know, like things the way they are.
Right.
So the highest has all these positive qualities, but they have these negatives as well. And as a general rule, on any of the behavioral styles we're talking about here, the positives of that behavioral style taken to an extreme turns into a negative.
Yeah.
And it really shows here with the high S, who is, they can be so laid back that they're passive. They can be so afraid of change, will actually undermine change without realizing it. So here's the story of Dan, the high S. So Dan's been married for almost 10 years. He doesn't really love his wife, but, you know, she's okay. So, you know, what are you going to do? He comes home for dinner every night. And spends his evening, he has his dinner, and spends his evening watching television. The shows aren't all that great, but, you know, better than doing something else, so he'll just keep doing watching TV. Now, his wife tries to get him to open up and talk more. But he knows the more he talks, the more trouble he seems to get himself in. So he just stays quiet, does as little as possible. He looks forward to Saturdays because on Saturdays, he and his buddies can play a little golf. And he's not that great at golf because he doesn't like to practice. But he likes going out with his buddies, just kind of walking around the golf course and telling stories and drinking beer. So what's Dan's problem? Why is he being coached? Well, his life is boring but acceptable. He doesn't see a way to change things. In fact, he'll tell you, I've tried everything to make my life less boring, and nothing seems to work. So there Dan sits. We all know someone like Dan?
Yes.
Yeah. It's very common. So do you think Dan's a good candidate for coaching?
Yeah.
Good. And what's the challenge you're going to have coaching someone like Dan?
They want change, but they like to change.
You know, they want change intellectually. As long as things stay the same, they'll be okay with the change. Yeah. So the high S can be a challenge to coach because they may, you know, there's an equation actually for change, and it really fits in well with the high S. The high S will change when they not only see the next steps, but they can see what the result is going to look like. And the result is going to be good for them. Then they'll say, okay, and I've taken away a lot of the risk here, now I'll consider changing. So what if you're a high S and you're a coach? What are some of your tendencies you might have? You might be a really, really good listener, and you listen to the client much more than actually coaching them. So you hear these things, but won't have the right questions to ask. Or you may not want to challenge that client. Because if you challenge them, you may be worried that it may be too much for them. They may not worry about that, but as a coach, you may worry about that. When it comes to goal setting, as a high S, you may not think big enough for some of your clients. and may not set really challenging goals. I mean, think about incremental progress as opposed to the big progress some of your clients want to make. I think the client is trying to go too fast. You may try and slow them down to ensure that you're being thorough with them. You might focus so much on emotions, you forget things like tasks and actions. So you got to give more focus to the tasks and actions they should take to put themselves forward for your clients. So questions about the high S as a coach and some of the challenges of being a high S coach? Can the high S be a great coach?
Yeah, they can be.
Yeah. What makes the high S a great coach?
Knowing themselves.
They'll know themselves? Yeah. And what qualities do they bring that as a coach that can really make them a great coach?
Reliability.
Reliability, absolutely.
Creating an atmosphere of real acceptance of the client.
Great one there. Yeah, the client's going to feel like they're in a place they're safe and they can trust their coach.
Good listening skills.
Yep, they had to have very good listening skills. Yep, and that's a very important course in a coaching relationship. What else? Anything else?
They won't try to take the client forward too fast.
They won't try and rush the client if the client's not ready to be rushed. Yeah. Go ahead.
They won't be as... they'll be more likely to let the client drive the agenda than maybe the D or I.
You think the D's nice might occasionally hijack the agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Only when you have to. Only when it's important to. Only when I should, almost every session. Mm. Yeah, that can be a challenge for the D and the I, but the S is going to let that client set the agenda more clearly. Good. Now, let's talk about the highest as a client. So, great things about having a high-S client, they're going to be patient. They're going to be realistic. They're going to be methodical. They're going to be easy to work with. They're going to show up on time for their sessions. I think it's pretty important to show up on time for the sessions. Yeah. And the idea of working with a coach feels really good. They like to cooperate with someone else to get things done, to get results. That feels great to them. Now, as a client, they have some challenges as well. They got the blind spots. And that is that they tend to hide their emotions. They don't express their emotions. And so it's hard to think what they're really thinking sometimes. They can be very upset and say, you know, this really upsets me deeply. And you go, really? You don't sound very upset about this. Yeah, it's deeply troubling to me. And, of course, they're trying to make change with the client and moving forward, they may get passive aggressive. So what you'll find is that you work on some actions with them, and they call back and you say, are those actions done? And they go, yeah, well, you know, there were some challenges and I really wanted to do it, but, you know, the dog ate my homework, so I couldn't quite finish it. So you'll get reasons or excuses for things not getting done because they are passive aggressive. And you have to be willing to see through that and know when to push them harder to make those changes. Now, and actually interacting with others, they tend to avoid confrontation. Confrontation scares the heck out of the high S. They don't like it. It makes them very uncomfortable. Okay? And so they're going to do everything they can to avoid dealing with that problem neighbor, that problem coworker, that problem spouse or child. So you have to help them understand how to go about confronting an issue without being confrontational. Because the word confrontation scares them. You have to work about on how to get them to address an issue without it being a confrontation. Now, you'll also see the high S. They tend to put their own needs last. So you'll get that woe is me thing from the high S. It's so terrible because everybody else is getting their needs met and me and I'm not. Well, how about we put you first? Well, I can't be first, can I? No, it's not my role to be first. Well, as coaches, we all understand that we don't take care of ourselves. We can't take care of others. So, sounds like coaching the high S. Well, first of all, they're there to change, but they don't particularly like the idea of changing. They'll also, as you're working through the client and you'll hear that shift with the client, they'll shift, but then actually moving into action, they'll decide things so slowly that it takes a lot of time to get them to make that decision. And then when you give them the action items to them, yeah, if it involves things that are hard because it involves a confrontation or a discussion, they may not complete their actions, again, being passive-aggressive. So those are some of the challenges of the high S as a client. Are there questions about the high S here?
Dave, I have another observation. I'm working with a high S client right now. It seems like they get victim-y.
Very. I agree.
Yeah. I'm the victim of circumstance. It's not my fault. The world's out to get me. Why do I deserve this? I don't deserve this. Okay. And how do you coach someone like that?
How do you coach someone like that?
I don't know. I'm a B and I think I need a stick.
I think one expression I used with her was, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right, so that they don't feel overwhelmed.
Yep, that's a good one. Other suggestions from the class are, how do you coach that high S who's a victim?
I tell them flat out from the beginning what their tendencies are.
Say that again.
I actually have a client who is a very high S, and in one of our very first sessions, I basically had a conversation with her and told her that, what I was expecting to see from her. And from that moment on, she was receptive because she felt, she just felt like, oh, wow, you get me. You don't even know me. Like, she almost knew what her shortcomings were or what her challenges were. And I don't know. I think she wanted validation. I think she thought she was a little crazy.
That's really a good point. They may feel like I have all these problems and no one else does. So we're back kind of getting to that woe is me type thing. So, yeah, helping them see that others have similar problems.
Mm-hmm.
Really helping them see a new result, the new you. And do you like this new you? And can we, as it was already said here, eat the elephant one bite at a time? Can we take baby steps?
Yeah.
Yeah. They tell a high D to take baby steps, they go like, what are you talking about? Giant steps. Yeah.
There was also, in the reading material, it was mentioned about try to make everything seem like it's their idea. I'm not really clear on how that works, being a really direct communicator myself. Can you clue us in a little bit more on that, Dave?
Sure. This is where the value of the questions as a coach really comes in. If you're asking the open-ended questions, that allows the client to find their own solutions, then you can help them to say, oh, well, that's really interesting idea. How would you go about doing that?
Yeah.
Now, the challenge with high S in doing that is what we refer to as priming the pump. Anybody here out working the farm and know what priming the pump means?
Yep.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Can you explain what priming the pump means to those of us, those people here who don't have a farming background?
Yeah, you add a little bit of water when you start pumping, and it draws the water up from the ground. So you put a little bit in as you pump, and it draws it up.
Yeah. So the old hand pumps, the way to get them going, you pour some water in first, and then you start pumping, and that water being in there helps get more water flowing. So with the high S, we talk to coaches about it's not about the coach's ideas, but when do you give suggestions? One time is to prime the pump.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So you offer one or two things to get them thinking about more possibilities. So be careful when you offer something up that they don't sit there and say, oh, that's a good idea, I'll just do that. Well, that was just a suggestion. Let's talk about some other ideas. What does that make you think about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that help?
Yeah. Definitely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. So the highest, you may have to prime the pump a little more than you do with the others. Get them thinking about some ideas. Get them brainstorming. Ask them to brainstorm ideas with someone they really trust outside the coaching session. If you can do things like that, you'll really get them thinking about the possibilities. They'll come back to you with their suggestions then. And theirs are always better than ours because they belong to them.
Yeah.
All right. Question you want to ask the high S. How does this make you feel? Because they won't ask themselves that question because they want to hide that emotion. And they're going to come back and say, well, I feel okay about that. You know, don't settle for the mediocre answer. Remember we talk about coaching, you know, in a few, play dumb and dig deep. You hear the answer, keep digging down, keep peeling back that onion, get what's underneath that emotion, get them to really express themselves. What's the opportunity here? You show me the roadblocks. What's the opportunity? What could happen? How is this issue going to affect you, your family, your friends, your coworkers? Thinking about others. What do you need to feel better about this? They can identify an end result. Help them get their way to work their way there. When can you do this? Because they're passive-aggressive. They may agree to the action, but not really agree to it. So nail them down to a time frame. Be their accountability partner. And simply, you know, what can you do about this? What are you going to do? I don't know. That's why I'm talking to you, coach. There are some acts we can take here. Help them identify things they can really do. And that's going to help the high S then get enough, be brave enough to take some actions. Okay. Questions about the high S? Go on to the high C. Okay. So, you know, what's the high C like? Well, the high C stands for conscientious. By the way, if you ever do this in public, like a workshop, something like this, you try to spell conscientious and you spell it wrong, the C's are going to tell you that. The I's won't care. The S's will be quiet if they say it's wrong. The C's are going to be like, hey, you spelled conscientious wrong. Or you got to, you know, you got to change it. So they're going to point out the mistakes to you. That C may stand for correct or compliant or controlled. High C's tend to be under control all the time. You think back to Marston's model about the idea of the environment being negative and one they have no control over? Yeah. That's why they make the rules and they follow the rules, because the rules protect them from bad things. So the C's tend to be rule followers. They also tend to be very, very polite, because politeness is society's rules of order, and they like the rules. Okay? They have a natural fear. They fear most of anything else being wrong, because they're so careful and methodical what they do. If they're actually wrong, it can actually drive them a little bit nuts. And the fun part is, you get a high C and you got one, and they're actually wrong, and they suddenly realize that they're wrong. They'll try and convince you that they were right even when they weren't. And they know they're not. So it turns into a big circle. They're trying to prove how right they really are. But I was right, so the fact that this thing here changed, and therefore I really would have been right, but that was different. So, see, I couldn't tell. So it's not my fault. And they tend to communicate in very precise ways. And precise doesn't necessarily mean short. It may mean very long. You've heard the expression, I asked him what time it was, he told me how to build a watch. That comes from a high C. Because to be accurate means to give you all the details, or you really won't understand. So let's talk about a high C here at their best. And at their best, the high C is accurate, they're careful, they're methodical, and they're considerably reliable by everyone who knows them. They excel at research. They can be counted on to dig out the details and do the research. The project has to get done right each and every time. I want my surgeon to be a high C. They believe in following the rules. They dot their I's. They cross their T's. So everything is correct, because anything worth doing is worth doing right. They're polite. They routinely say please and thank you. They hold the door for others. And they wish everyone would be as respectful as they are. They don't believe in showing their emotions. That would just get in the way of making the right decisions. They set high standards for themselves and everyone else around them. They don't like sloppy work, and they'll check and double-check their work to make sure it's correct and accurate. And in doing so, they'll go slow to make their decision to make sure it's exactly the right decision. Sound familiar?
Definitely.
Yeah. We all know some people who are like that. Like I said before, I want my surgeon to be a high C. Methodical, everything exactly the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, I want that to be. I want my dentist, especially, to be a high C. I don't want a high-eyed dentist. I want a high C who's so careful with me and I'm not going to get myself hurt in the process.
This is Beth. I actually have a contradiction slightly, or I do DISC workshops with women in medicine, including surgeons, and they say that, at least the D ones say that it's really important to be D because they need to make decisions quickly. They can't be analyzing stuff like a C.
Yeah. So what do you really want in your surgeon? A combination of D and C.
Yeah, that's what I would
say. Yeah.
Now,
we're going to discuss those combination patterns starting starting tomorrow night, actually. I want the surgeon to be, I want him to be C, I want him to be careful, but I want him to be also decide things what they have to do quickly. If they nick something, I want him to say, huh, what should I do now? Let me just check the manual here. No, I want him to decide that stuff quickly, but I want him to be careful. So a combination pattern with D and a C, to me, that's somebody I want to have, they can take good care of me. Bedside manner, maybe a little lacking, but I'll likely survive.
Awesome.
Let's talk about Jim, the accountant. He loves his job in accounting. He knows a lot of the debits equal the credits, that all is right with the world. He works for a small accounting firm. Each month, he has a list of clients that he works on and maintains the books for. So each month, the clients send in their bookkeeping to him. He writes their journal entries. He reconciles their bank accounts, creates the income statement and balance sheet. He knows what has to happen, very predictable, the way he likes it. And he always knows that Sam the plumber will have his things on his desk no later than 3 days after the end of the month. But Dr. Kildare over there, they had a prior phone call to get his stuff sent in because he keeps forgetting about it. But it happens that way every month. So what's his challenge? Well, sometimes he gets to be so much of a perfectionist that he ends up in the ready, aim category. So he and his lovely wife have been wanting to buy a new house the last several years, but they can't find one that's perfect because each one has some kind of problem with it. Yeah, you can picture that Jim, can't you?
Yeah.
Everything's not quite right. I had a client a while back who was starting a business. She was not a coach, but she was. It was one of those one-person type businesses like coaching, and she came to me after having several coaches who said, I can't work with you because I can't get these things done. And we talked about what you're trying to do, and I said, so what's the hold-up getting your business started? He said, everything has to be perfect before I can open the business. I've got to be perfect for open the business, and you've got to get these things done. I said, I think that's great. Do you have a target date for that? Target date for what? The day you're going to be perfect. And that made her stop and go, oh, I guess I won't be perfect, will I? No, probably not. What's good enough? Let's focus on that. Challenge of a high C. Now, as you might imagine, there are some downsides to the high C. So at their worst, the high C is unyielding, perfectionist, demands everything be done one way only, and that's their way. They can be rigid and unwilling to compromise even over the smallest details. They want things to be done in a routine way over and over again with no variance whatsoever, or it throws them into a tizzy. They have the inability to admit mistakes, sometimes create elaborate excuses as to why what they've done is really correct, even though it is very clearly not correct. They'll focus on the minutiae, on some bigger issue, let that minutia distract everything away from what's really important. Because you know what? They're right, and they know they're right. That's out there to somebody out there. Know some folks like that?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For sure. Very much so.
Makes you want to strangle them sometimes, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The S and the C are really close, though, you know?
Much more of a challenge with the S and the C, telling them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thinking emotions
in common. Go ahead.
No, I said that one of the things I think the differences between the S and the C is that what you said earlier, the C is not usually emotion-driven, whereas the S is.
Yeah. They both tend to mask their emotions, but the S actually is quite emotional about what they do, but they don't let you know what that emotion is. You've heard the old joke, I'm really mad at you. What's what I do wrong? You should know. Don't know. Well, you should. Well, you figure it out. You come back, and we'll talk about it then. Well, that drives the D's especially crazy when that happens with an S. But you're right. They're very closely aligned. Emotions are one of the key indicators in there. Also, the willingness to dig into the detail. C's are going to get very detail-oriented. S's are going to do things at a much different level and not worry much about making a mistake. They don't want to be wrong, but they're not going to go to the extremes that the C's are going to go to make sure that things are exactly right. So let's talk about Tiffany, because Tiffany works in the library. She loves books. The fact that all the books are filed in a particular order. She loves Melville Dewey because he invented the Dewey Decimal System, and she uses that every single day. She loves that. Of course, if she helped Melville design the system, it'd be even better than it was right now, but it's still a pretty good system. Now, Tiffany's a little out of sorts right now because her daughter had cereal for breakfast this morning, used the last of the milk, meaning that she couldn't have milk for her coffee. And that throws her into a tizzy, because she knew this was going to be a really bad day. And you know what? Yeah, she was right. She found 3 books misfiled. That's just before noon. So looking at a job posting them online, and noticed that the author had misused the terms there and they are. That just drove her nuts. So she saw her daughter Grace this morning, and she was putting in last night's book reports, back returns, and Grace checked in some of the books in the system and put them in the wrong order. So Tiffany put a quick stop to that problem, because first you alphabetize them, and then you check them in, not the other way around. So that's kind of the negative look at the high C. Know some people like that? Would you like to strangle sometimes?
I'm married to one.
Married to one. So when it comes to balancing the checking account, too big thumbs.
Go ahead.
There you go. And by the way, remember, the DISC behavioral profile does not measure intelligence. So they can be meticulous and wrong. Ooh. Picture a high C accountant who's not good at math. Yeah. And those folks do exist.
Wait,
so,
there's nothing worse than a high C accountant who is super ridiculously intelligent. That's the person I'm married to. And I'm a high D, so I don't know how it works, but it does.
Yeah. So, if you're a coach and you're a high C, you might get too focused on the details and miss the bigger issue. You may also listen to the same process, the emotional undertones there. What's underneath there? What's driving the reason for the issue? What's the emotion? They must focus on the story so much and the details of the story and the order of the story that they miss the important things. They can also focus on the negative aspects way too much. And their sessions may be so structured that the client has no room to vary and to breathe and to grow. And they may come across as being too reserved or too distant with the clients, wants an emotional connection, and can't find it with the high C. Can the high C be a great coach? Of course they can.
Sure.
Yeah. Because you know what? They're not going to let some of the stories that are way out of whack get by them. They're going to stop and ask those kind of questions. So as long as they're aware of their tendencies and know what they might, or they might go off track, they can become great coaches. All right. As a client, natural strengths, they think analytically. They're going to weigh the pros and cons. They're going to be logical about things. They're comprehensive problem solvers. So when you're working through an issue with them, you work it through very methodically and think of the different steps. So what can be the challenge with that, the blind spots? Well, they may be working on a problem and get focused on the minutiae, the unimportant minutiae, versus the important things of the problem, and let that hang them up from moving forward. And if you criticize them, they can be very defensive because they're not used to being wrong. Even when they're wrong, they really think they're right. You laugh, but you've all seen it, haven't you?
Well,
yeah. Interaction with others. They can be overly critical. Again, focusing on things that are small, missing that big picture, which makes it come across too critical. Because they're so reserved, they can appear aloof and overly cool. So, challenge of coaching if I see analysis paralysis. Well, analyze things six ways from Sunday and never have to make a decision to move forward. We'll just do more analysis. We'll just do more. We'll just look at one more. I have just one more question. So one more thing we need to know here. Well, I can't quite move forward just yet. If you talk about selling techniques and selling to a high C, one thing they oftentimes talk about helping them sell, help people sell the high C's is saying, if I can solve this problem right now you're having, what else is standing in your way making a decision? Because if they can, you can nail them on that kind of a question, if they have more questions, they don't admit that they're wrong about having no more questions. So it helps you kind of get to the close faster in the selling process. Also, because they kind of follow the rules, they can hamper their creativity. Because you got to follow the rules. And they don't always express themselves or their feelings very well. They have a lot of words, but not what's underneath them. Questions so far? All right. Questions to ask the high C. What's a realistic outcome? Much like ask the high I. But in this case, it's, okay, guys, let's not look for perfection here. What's realistic? What can we really get done here? What else do you need to know to make this decision? When will you do this by? And by the way, here they basically give you a date 3 weeks out, and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. It's a simple problem. Let's do a little sooner than that. So you got to push a little bit to make some decisions faster. How does this impact others? Because they forget about others and the emotions of others. But they love the question about what are the pros and cons. They like to make lists of pros and cons. It's very natural for them. So, there you have the high C. Delightful, huh? Yeah. Now, here is an unannounced quiz question for you. Think very carefully. You've now seen all four behavioral styles. What is my behavioral style?
An I.
F.
I would say an I with some with a balance of C thrown in.
I with some C thrown in. Okay.
I see L and I.
S-I.
S-I?
I've got S-I as well, yeah.
S? Okay, S-I?
I say I-C.
I-C, okay.
High C trailing I.
High C trailing I, okay. All right. So here it is. My primary style is high D.
My God.
The secondary style is high C.
Interesting.
Oh.
Huh?
So anybody, go ahead.
I was going to say, we kind of missed the D.
I guess
you're in control of your emotions. So that you're not leading with that demanding. It was very comfortable.
Okay, good.
So there's hope for you.
How much do you like teaching, Dave?
How much do I like teaching? I love teaching.
There we go.
It's a blast. I have a lot of fun teaching.
I like why we picked up on some I.
And that's why people, I mean, and this is one of the things that pops up, is that you get someone in a certain circumstance. You can misjudge. You don't see the whole person. You only see part
right.
of them.
Right.
Yeah. Now, if you look at my emails, and you say,
yeah.
my sister say, oh, yeah, there's a high D. I get it.
You know what? Now that you say that, you're right.
Yeah.
Because
my high Ds tend to be, my mediums tend to be rather short. Correct. Right. To the point. Here's slides for nice quest. See y'all later. Okay, good. Thanks. Does that mean I don't like people? Of course I love people. I love helping. That's why I became a coach.
Well,
my natural style is a D followed by a C.
Hmm.
My I is so low. Okay. So thus ends tonight's session. We will come back tomorrow night. If you want to hear about marketing, how I marketed with using DISC, you're welcome to stay on the line. If not, you're welcome to hang up and no hard feelings. But
Dave, before we move on, I have a really quick question about the
sure.
The difference between the D and C. If you were to walk up and, you know, do that 30-second analysis, shake hands with each one of them, what would be the major distinction you would be able to grab right off the top?
Handshake would tell me immediately, because the handshake of a D is going to be much firmer than that of a C, whether it be a male or a female.
Oh, I misspoke. I'm sorry. S-C.
Oh, S and C.
Yes, I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Mm-hmm. Easy with a D and a C, yeah.
That's right. I misspoke. I was thinking relating it to tonight's lesson. So the S would make eye contact with you when you shake your hand. Would the C not? You know, those kind of things.
Look down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And They will shake your hand because that's a respectful thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes will respond to your handshake. See, we'll want to put the hand out first because they're supposed to do that. The C will not look you in the eye. The S will look you in the eye. If you ask the question, hey, how are you? The C is going to give you the polite response, I'm fine. The S may actually give you a little more than that.
Gotcha.
I'm fine. Thanks for asking. Really good to see you, too. Now, assuming that you know a little bit about them, if you're a total stranger, they're both going to be quiet. Because neither one of them knows you, they're both going to be much more reserved. Now, if you're a high I, you approach a high S, a person who's not sure about an S or a C, the high I reaction to the S will react much more positively to the high I right up front. And be much more likely to smile and say, oh, thanks for asking. Hey, it's great to see you here, too. The C's going to be much more reserved even then.
Gotcha.
Okay. So let's I built my practice using DISC because it was a great tool for me. And the number of things I did to market DISC, if you will, the simplest thing I would tell you is that we'll talk about in session 6 paper profiles, but I used to carry them around with me in my briefcase all the time. I used to carry on 5 or 6 of them. Because I would give them away to people on the spot and take the profile on the spot because they cost me, you know.
When you're saying that, Dave, and give a profile on the spot, what you're saying is, here, I'll give you free access. You can go ahead and enter in and get your profile.
Yep. Talk to them a little bit about what's going on with DISC and how it might help them and say, well, you want to see how it works? Let me just show you. Here. And sit down with them with a profile right in front of them. Give them 7-10 minutes, have them fill it out by hand. Score it right in front of them. They love when you score right in front of them. And then as you're scoring it, you're interpreting it as you go along. The more thing, it's a little like being a fortune teller.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. The things you say that are right, they get enthralled with it. They go, wow, how did you know that about me? And it's all the basic stuff inside a DISC, but it hits home for them really hard. And so doing that paper profile in front of someone, if they're a decision maker, I mean, I sold more $5,000 workshops with a $10 paper profile. It's embarrassing almost. The ROI on that is phenomenal. If you don't sell a workshop, it costs you $10. Big deal. So that's one thing I did was have those things with me all the time. I had on my business card as well. Ask how DISC can help you. And they go, what's that? What's this DISC? How's that going to help me? Oh, there's opening for your conversation. I changed my LinkedIn profile. So it said, for a long time, David R. Meyer, Denver's DISC Specialist. So by the way, when you searched on DISC in Denver, what do you think popped up first? My LinkedIn profile.
I like that. That's good sense.
Yeah. You'll find people out there who call themselves the DISC Ninja, the DISC Guru, all these terms you can pick out for yourself that tie the word DISC back to who you are. If you're doing personal coaching, DISC is a tool you can use. With businesses, it makes more sense because business people like to have some things they can touch and feel. And they love the idea of reports. So that's why, say, for me, with my niche, which was in high tech, it made great sense to use DISC that way. If you're talking about having a practice that focuses on, you know, married couples, DISC works the same way. You can create, you get two DISC profiles, two from people, and say, ah, so you're naturally a high D. You're naturally a high S. Let's create action plans and how we can deal with each other. So in those kind of workshop type situations or that kind of coaching, it's a great tool to have.
So when you promoted, did you first promote? I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. Go ahead and finish.
No, go ahead. What's your question?
So when you promoted that, did you promote that as an opportunity for, you know, here's a free short disc workshop, come and, you know, participate if you like, and at the end you'll walk away with a disc profile?
Actually, one of the things I did was I created my mailing list. You've probably heard this before. Your mailing list, your email list is your biggest asset as a coach. You want to create a big mailing list. And you can then advertise workshops either in person or remote. And you don't have to use the word, you can use DISC as a tool that way, but you can talk about creating plans to improve your relationship. One of my coaches here in Denver used DISC as a way to, she actually created, she was a dating coach. She did dating workshops. And she used DISC as a way to create discussion inside of her dating workshops. Because one of the things you do in these workshops is you get people into the four quadrants based on their behavioral style.
Yeah.
And then you have all these questions you ask them and have them react as a group. And people, because their people are communicating that way, they find things attractive in people across the room, and they find ways to get together. So it was, you know, it's a great tool that way. So,
Dave, I work with caregivers, and in this particular situation, it's parents of children with behavioral issues, and I thought that working with the families and working with the support partners that work with the families, if I do a presentation to them, with the idea of presenting this to the family and seeing how that might be able to help. I don't want to cross that line where the therapists are working with families. What would you say is the best way to go about that without stepping on toes?
Well, the way that I use this, that way both, you know, caregivers, but even with anybody, tell you the truth, is to use the DISC common language. And actually, I'm going to talk about DISC. I'll talk about the fact that it creates a common language you can use. So instead of telling somebody, yeah, you're being a big jerk right now, which is a negative connotation, obviously, you might say, well, I can really see that high D popping out now, can't I? And they know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
So the common language of DISC is one of the things that when I get into workshop situations, I especially focus on. This gives you that language to use that is non-confrontational, no negative connotations around it, but you can use to help improve the communication between the people by using the DISC terms for it.
Okay,
thank you. Did that help you?
Yes.
Good.
That's pretty funny.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. When we're through with this, with the pieces, you know, and at the end of 6 weeks, and, you know, exam, et cetera, when we get at that point, what access do we have for electronic profile, et cetera? You know, just generic, not going into detail. I know you're going to go into that later. So we'll have access so we can give clients, here's how we, you know, like when I work with Laura and I use an SEIP, I'll, you know, give the client access so they'll take it and we'll go from there. How does that work with the DISC?
Yeah, it works the same way. There's a variety of ways you can do it. X, cover those three ways just real briefly here. One is, you're going to use disk profiles occasionally, just once in a while. The other thing to do is, when you need a profile, call me and say, Dave, I need a profile, and it's like $37.50, and I'll send the access code out, and it's not a big deal. It takes me 5 minutes. And the only downside to that is it's got my name on there and my logo, that kind of stuff, as opposed to your own. But if you're only going to use a handful, there's no real problem with that. If you're going to use 10, 12, or more a year, we can get you an account called SubAccount that allows you to put your logo on there, your information on there. And then just like with Laura's stuff, you can log on to the network, to the system, enter information, create the profile instantly, just like you guys got yours for the class here. It takes only a few seconds to do that. And the cost per profile goes down to about $29 per profile. And you have access to a variety of profiles beyond the Discord you've got there. A whole lot more you can get access to as well. Everything from different types of disk profiles, different perspectives on disk, you as a manager, you as a salesperson, how you deal with relationships, to things like how you manage time, that kind of stuff. That stuff's all available through a sub-account.
Is there an initial cost to do that, or is once you set it up, it's just per usage?
Actually, there's an initial setup fee. First of all, the sub-account actually goes through me. Uh-huh. Initial fee to set that up is $165.
Okay.
It's a one-time fee. There's no renewal on it. It's just when you pay it, you're done.
Okay.
And then what you do is it's like a checking account. You have to put money in there to buy these what they call credits.
Right.
And then as you buy reports, you spend the credits to get your reports. And that's a cheap way to do it. I'd say it's $165 up front, and it's a one-time fee only.
Okay.
Now, if you're going to get really aggressive with disk, you're going to use 100 or more, 200, a couple of them per year, you can become a distributor. That's what I am. It costs $4,000 or $5,000 to do that. I get a better price on the profiles even than of course, sub-accounts get, but it's a pretty big investment up front.
Okay.
So I always tell people, if you think you're going to use disk a lot, do a sub-account, start doing hundreds per year, become a distributor. But until then, don't spend the money to do that.
Okay.
Does that help?
Okay. I'll keep you as my resource, so when I get to that point, I can come to you.
I'm happy to do it. And again, when you start using this, you're going to go through 6 sessions of training, and then you get your first disk report, you're going to go, now what do I do again? That's when you start to say, oh, I know, I call Dave. That's what I do. You just call me and I'll help you.
Get that high D on the phone.
Well, you know, and I'm happy to help people. I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say, okay, class is over, we're done. If you got questions, call me. You know, I'm happy to answer questions for you and help you be. Is Ruby still on the phone?
I am.
Okay, Ruby was one of my students in my CTA class when I taught with CTA. And I think she'll tell you, if you need help, I'm happy to help you.
And if you're out in Denver, you should dial him up for brunch.
That's true. We had lunch together.
Yep, we sure did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are killing me with the time. I'm in New Jersey.
Oh, so am I. This is Yolanda. Who's in New Jersey?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you are?
Angela.
Angela. Nice to meet you again.
Hi. I'm in New Jersey too. Wendy.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Hi, good.
You know,
for vacation, and called me and said, hey, Dave, I'm in town. Let's get together for lunch, and we did. So, yeah, if you ever come out this way, just give me a call.
I had offered to have my information, cell phone number, email put out there. I don't know if that's something you could do, and anybody who's interested can respond. I'd be loved to connect with people. I am a high I. especially those of you in New Jersey, because then we might even be able to network here. So, you know, if there's a way that you know, Dave, you can put that out there. I'd appreciate it. And, you know, whoever responds is welcome.
Hey, anybody who responds, they want to have their stuff put out there, I'm happy to put it out there for the group. But I do encourage you guys, if you have someone nearby like this, I mean, you know, coaching tends to be a very solitary practice,
mm-hmm.
which to me drove me just a little bit nuts. So I worked with a partner for years, and we did workshops together, and we did products together and all kinds of stuff because, you know, two brains are better than one.
Right.
And in DISC workshops especially, you know, it's 4 hours of work on your feet for a short one. Some of them are two days long. So having a partner to share things with and trade off things, yeah, it makes life a lot easier. So if it's not a formal partnership, just share some things on DISC together. I love the idea personally.
Cool. Great, thank you. One more thing. I wanted to find out, how do we access the recordings on the calls that we've had?
You should have gotten the link from Coach Training Alliance. Actually, they sent out more than one time so far. That gives you the ability to download those recordings. Stephanie?
I haven't received anything yet.
Sorry, who's that speaking?
This is Glenn. I haven't received anything from CTA yet on that.
Really? Then I can send it off to you this afternoon. Who else didn't get the link for that besides Glenn? Sorry, I heard too many people talking at once.
Okay, Yolanda?
Yolanda?
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't get the link either?
No.
Okay.
I don't remember seeing one, but that doesn't mean I didn't get one.
Well, you know, Jeff, if you didn't get it, you know, you guys have my email address, drop me a note, and I'll get it off to you. Because I record all the sessions, and I save all the recordings, actually.
So can we go, like, back to the beginning if we wanted to hear it again?
Yeah, you can go back to it, because, you know, what I say, I download them.
Okay.
So I can, you know, if I was taking a class, I'd sit there and say, yeah, because I want to listen to it again, you know, a month from now or 2 months from now. Because you forget stuff.
Right.
I mean, you got the workbook, which I think is a pretty good workbook, but I think the recordings are pretty helpful.
Dave, will you be covering the basics of doing a workshop on this for DISC?
Not really so much in this class, because it really is based, you know, toward using it as a coaching. If you wonder about some workshop stuff, I can do it again after sessions. Tomorrow night or next Wednesday, probably. Talk about how I do some workshops, because, I mean, it's a great way to
do it. Yeah, I would appreciate that. Next Wednesday, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm on board with that, too, Dave. I would love to hear about that.
Happy to do that. I mean, it's a great way to make some money, because, I mean, I sold mine for $5,000 and $6,000 a piece, and I found I was underpricing them. They're worth more than that, apparently, so... Yeah, and I use them. I use workshops to get one-on-one clients.
Yeah.
So, all right. So yeah, we'll do that next Wednesday. I'll make a note here to talk about that after class next Wednesday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else for tonight?
No. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank
happy
you.
I could help.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank
Have
you.
A great night.
Talk
Good
to
night,
you
everybody.
Tomorrow.
Good night.